Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So this would be The Media Project, and you lucky listeners are going to get to hear this program.
Were you being sardonic, Rexy?
Sarcastic, slightly, one might say. Absolutely.
I think we should speak very slowly this week.
Okay.
Because we don't have a lot of topics, and we're just going to stretch out one or two we have.
we'll be fine. Important, great topics. The Media Project here. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with Ira Fussfeld and Daley Freeman in Kingston. Sir?
Nice to see you.
Absolutely. Great to see you. And Dr. Alan Shartok, our color commentator.
Hello,
the CEO of Northeast. The CEO of NEPR, Northeast Public Radio.
He has to rest up, you know.
He has to rest up?
Yes, because the fund drive is imminent.
Imminent fund drive, yes. We wish you...
He's been known to be on the air quite a bit during the fund drive.
Is that right?
Yes, I've heard that.
I hadn't heard such notation. Anyway, we have a couple of pieces of mail that are worth noting. Bruce writes to us about the conversation we had about David Ortiz of the Boston
Red Sox. Right, that was a good one.
Dropping the F word on live television and
getting away with it.
And getting away with it, right. And he talks about the fact, Bruce, who writes in, talks about his mother-in-law, who was a former Christian missionary who had a philosophy of cussing. She believed, Bruce writes, that if one overused profanity, it would lose its punch on those rare occasions when no other words were sufficient. And so David Ortiz's response to marathon bombings, Bruce writes, he was implicitly naming the marathon bombing as a profane occurrence. Profane to a wonderful city and a world-class athletic event. To name such a heinous act as profane is to diminish some of its power. And second, he says, as one could tell by the cheers from the crowd at Fenway Park, the use of profanity gave voice to anger and outrage. So with all of that, I think the use of a harsh form of profanity had some redemptive qualities to it.
Yeah, but you know, he's going to judge the acceptance of the profanity. A crowd of 35,000 fans in Fenway Park who have been known to use that word often directed more often than not at the Yankees or whatever. Listen, the one thing I agree with that letter is if you don't use profanity often and then you use it, it does have more power. It describes a level of anger that's really something that you've been forced to use a profanity. But I still believe that it is a civilized society. You're in a public stage, and there are other words that are just as powerful that can be used, and there's no need in that circumstance to resort to profanity.
How boring.
In the context of this conversation, though, then do you think the FCC was right to not penalize anybody for this?
Yes, sure. And that FCC business, you know, how are you going to penalize? Well, first of all, they couldn't penalize him or the Red Sox.
Right.
So who are they going to penalize? They're going to penalize the broadcasters. Well, the only fault that the broadcasters would have, Alan, tell me if I'm wrong, is that they didn't put it on a delay. But who would think you'd need to put that on a delay? It's not their fault.
The world can't be delayed. But no, I agree with you about one thing. But I have to tell you, it raises a whole other issue for me. If, in fact, the grandmother was right, and there are times when you use an expletive to make a case, to show that it's unusual. Well, now think about how I'm always lecturing you guys on your awful way of editing the news so that the full range of the news doesn't, we don't hear it. So if you can't use the F word, or if you can't use the S word, or many others, which I don't even want to raise right here, then in fact, you guys are changing the tenor of the news, the import of the news by censoring. And that's what you are, both of you. a bunch of censors.
Well, I don't know that Rex is agreeing with me.
As opposed to WAMC, which of course lets anything go, you know.
But here's the difference.
Here's why you are righteous and we're not. Yes, please.
We cannot.
You cannot.
We are not allowed.
Ah.
You are allowed. In fact, the unctuous, condescending sort of approach that both of you take with me, but particularly you, Rex, is that...
Well, I think it's well-deserved.
Yes, I get it. Is that you people think that you have this wide latitude because while radio stations are improperly, that's my word, improperly censored, yours is not. So you can do more, but you choose not to.
I do. I choose not to publish the N-word, the F-word, the S-word, and lots of other things.
Well, I wouldn't publish the N-word.
Oh, I see. But you would publish these other words that we're objecting
to. Well, I might publish the N-word if you want to show, or the J-word, if you want to show the ultimate bigotry of some of these animals.
And we do that. We've done stories about it. Absolutely. Yep. You're right.
Usually with a disclaimer.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's an internal disclaimer, you know. I mean,
No, you'll put an editor's note that says the contents may be offensive to some people or use of a word may be. But I think your example is exactly what I'm trying to say, is that we can use those words in the newspaper, but we use some, I think, proper judgment to say these are words we don't want to expose people who do not like these words.
Oh, God forbid.
No, because
God
we
forbid.
Are following and, exactly yeah. the context of what our writer Bruce is telling us, which is we are saying these are words that are profane, that have power when they're used, but we don't if we use them in everyday discourse.
Sure.
And Alan, I think you would be much better off if you were freed from the FCC constraints.
I agree with you.
And I'll bet you wouldn't be using a lot of these words on the air in
That's
any
true.
Case. Well, there you go. So you'd be censoring people just as Ira and I do.
You make an unusually good point.
There we go. We persuaded him to our side.
Not really.
We have another piece of mail, folks. And I should mention to you, by the way, while we're sitting right here, that you can join this conversation by writing media@wamc.org. Media@wamc.org. Because this is the Media Project. Dear panelists.
Wait a second. He's saying that because he's trying to make it that I talk too much. And that's why he's saying the media. Just so if it went by you and you didn't understand what Rex was up to, that's what he was up to.
The whole station's a media project, I think.
Now it all comes out.
Here we go.
As opposed to the Times Union. Go ahead.
Greg in North Adams. He takes issue with Rosemary Armeo, who is not here with us today. Rosemary is off doing some weeks of investigative reporting in Eastern Europe. Last week, I could not help but shake my head at the self-righteousness displayed by Rosemary Armeo's comment that the Justice Department subpoena of a reporter's correspondence records was, quote, worse than Nixon. And this guy says, Greg in North Adams says, while I do not agree with DOJ's tactics, the legal process of going before a judge, presenting evidence, getting legitimate permission for a legal subpoena is not something Nixon would have done, probably. Nixon's tactics of smearing journalists with lies, secret surveillance, not to mention breaking and entering, etc., were clearly illegal. While the Obama administration's legal request merely tests the known historic tension between the First Amendment and legislation. This is a very good letter, isn't it?
I told you. I gave it to you. I wrote big letters across it. Rex!
Time and time again, reporters have discovered the hard way that they do not have carte blanche to violate laws in pursuit of a story. I disagree. I don't think that any of the people that the Justice Department went after was violating a law. Rights not absolute. Journalist shield laws in many states help make boundaries of legal probation protection clearer. But on the federal level, with no such law, the lines are much fuzzier. So it's he makes a good point. This guy says, if and when the Obama administration does to any journalist what the Nixon administration tried to do to Jack Anderson, up to and including pondering killing him, which is true, they did weigh that, I'll eat my words.
Will you remind me about that?
Jack Anderson, there was actually conversation.
He took over for Drew Pearson.
Right.
And then Jack Anderson, right.
Jack Anderson. And there was actually conversation among White House aides. The president, I don't believe, if I'm remembering the White House tapes correctly, I don't think there was any talk in the Oval Office. But there was talk about, we should just off the guy. So he urges us to stop hyperventilating with the editorial hyperbole. Whoa, hyperventilating with hyperbole.
And he's talking about you.
Stick to the story. Eric Holder appears to have overreached to catch a federal employee who is violating the law by leaking information. That's it. Your hurt feelings, he's saying to us, about the president's lack of respect for the profession are irrelevant.
Well, you know, I think he makes a good point. This has been made in some op-ed articles recently, Rex, by people who say, well, you know, you guys always circle the wagons and you always say, if it has to do with anything that diminishes the power of the press, it's bad. We can't do that. But the American people are not happy with that position. They don't like the press. They say it all the time in polls and every other way. So maybe in order to get the American people on your side, Rex, what you probably ought to be doing is being a little bit more conciliatory about what the limits of journalism should be, as opposed to this sort of wild reactive, wild-eyed, glassy-eyed reaction to anything that anybody ever suggests that the press has certain responsibilities to uphold.
So, Alan, you're saying that we should just roll over and let
you know
the
I'm not
Justice
saying
Department...
That.
Well, what are you
I
saying?
I have great objection to that. I am saying that somewhere there is a responsible middle. There's a point at which, you know, reporters are certainly law-abiding citizens, and when we ask them to obey the law and not to participate, for example, in taking leaks which could do harm to the American
security. Oh, really? We're
yeah,
not
really,
supposed
really,
to. We're
really,
supposed to just
yeah.
decide that, like the Pentagon Papers, for example,
it
was
example.
Better for journalists not to have published
no.
that.
Well, I said there's
oh.
a middle.
Oh,
you,
there's a
you
see,
oh, your so problem,
you're
Rexy.
You're going to decide.
Your problem, Rexy, is it's always all or nothing. That's
ah.
your problem. You're not capable of establishing that there are times to do it and times not to. WikiLeaks.
What do you mean?
Let me give you an example. WikiLeaks,
yeah.
okay?
Which leaks? WikiLeaks. Which WikiLeaks?
Well, the ones in which people who were posted in foreign countries as CIA operatives were named.
Not by responsible news organization in this country. You better specify who you're talking about, because the New York Times and the Washington Post, for example, did not publish
but
that.
But there were some
stuff.
That did, right?
Well, overseas.
Yeah.
Yes. And
the,
so who? So yes.
So,
so I'm saying that journalists are making discretion. I'm saying so that responsible journalists do. And you're taking the position that we ought to just say, okay, you know, ahead of time, we're going to say we're not going to take anything that is secret. So I think we do exercise the discretion that you're calling for.
Oh, for goodness sakes,
we
Rex.
Do.
Here's the point. It takes two to tango. There is the leaker. There is the reporter. Now, the reporters are taking great umbrage, and I think appropriately so, that they're saying that if they participate in taking important, valid leaks, that they could be seen as co-conspirators.
Yes.
But I don't see that happening. I don't see people being arrested as co-conspirators in the release of this material.
You're right. They haven't been, although they were described as that in an effort to get the documents. I mean, no reporter has been arrested. So I guess we should thank our lucky stars that Eric Holder hasn't yet put a reporter behind bars, which the Bush administration did do, of course, with Judith Miller, because she refused to reveal her source.
Well, that's always an issue, which is, you know, contempt versus co-conspirator.
Right. That's a different matter. But
so a horse of a different color.
And we'll remember that actually it was during the Bush administration that that Scooter Libby, the top aide to the vice president of the United States, was convicted in a federal court. Of what did he do? He leaked the name of a spy. He actually revealed what is known as an asset, you know, in the intelligence world. He leaked Valerie Plame's name.
Right.
And this was a despicable act.
It was.
It was used
and
for partisan purposes.
And not only that, but we see a new head of the FBI, as we speak now,
James
NPR,
Comey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ran into Ashcroft, the attorney general's room. He was number two.
Mm-hmm.
And tried to put a stop to the idea that they were strong-arming Ashcroft to pass yet another despicable, you know, law, which Ashcroft didn't believe in, and Ashcroft stood up. And that's one of the reasons the Democrats are happy enough to have nominated this guy to be head of the FBI
director. Yeah. Interestingly, by the way, Comey, who gets a lot of high marks.
Tall guy, 6'8".
He is not.
Something like that.
I remember going to I happened to be in Washington at the time that there was a federal indictment handed up of the pizza dealer here on Central Avenue in Albany. Two Muslims from Albany were arrested, charged with espionage, with conspiracy, in what many people believe was an ill-advised prosecution of rather innocence in this community. These guys are now serving time in federal prison. And Comey ended up being the guy who they sent out to do this press conference in the place of the FBI director and the attorney general, both of whom I think looked at the case and said, well, I'm not so sure I want to be on the forefront of this. And so they sent out Comey to have to stand there before the press and defend these indictments in Albany. Well, and he was, as the U.S. attorney, he prosecuted Martha Stewart, which I still believe was a politically motivated prosecution.
By the way, I couldn't agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. That was wrong.
Based on her support for Al Gore.
Well, I was happy to get her off the street. She's a danger. Making those muffins and making me put on weight. I have a question.
So that's how it happened.
That's partly it. I have a question to Alan's remark about how the press is disliked and the public does not appreciate the point of view that Rex is expressing. I just find it interesting historically that, and I don't know that it's every administration, but I think it is, every administration has a moment where the press becomes their enemy. And it's regardless of whether it's a Republican, conservative, liberal, Democrat, the press is out there doing its job as we believe it ought to be done. And they're not just taking press releases. They're asking questions. They're digging.
Okay.
They're talking to sources. I let you guys talk for 5 minutes. Well, let me get my point out.
So you're going to get your 5 minutes, whether it's relevant or not.
My point is that the press is disliked because it's become an equal opportunity attacker, investigator.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mario used to say, oh, really? Let me try one with you.
Okay. Did we say Alan talks too much?
You were the publisher of your paper.
Yeah, I used to be.
You had a union. You were negotiating with them, and the union or a reporter would negotiate by leaking to other press outlets what was going on. And how about you, Mr. Magnanimous Ira? Did you care about whether somebody in your organization was speaking unauthorized?
Well, first of all, not to take the union's position, I wouldn't describe it as leaking as opposed to another news organization.
Well, what if it was a leak?
If I was the president of the United States, it would drive me nuts that something that I said at a meeting showed up on TV 10 minutes later. But that is going to happen whether it's a Democratic administration or a Republican.
What if you're the publisher of the paper?
Not the same thing. We're a private business. I'm talking about the president of the United States.
Oh, here we go with the old Rex
thing,
the private business.
Everything
is different, Rex.
It is different. It is that this is public business. The government is different. And also, the government classifies too much information. A lot of stuff is labeled classified because it's simply embarrassing, politically embarrassing.
But I want to call you up short,
and
Mr. Rex.
And it's not the same thing. We have a constitutional obligation.
Okay, okay.
And you have it here, too, at WAMC, despite the fact of your contempt for journalism, that you should
Why
be pursuing
this. Why do you say I'm contemptuous?
Because you're attacking us for pursuing
stories.
No, it's
a media show. I'm trying to have a robust discussion. Sometimes I even take the other side just for the hell of it. But let me say, but speaking of which, Rex, you said something that was very interesting. It caught my attention. You said... Two Muslims were arrested.
Yes.
Now, what if we were to substitute other words for that, like two Protestants were arrested, two Jews were arrested? Would we do that?
I think the record will show that they were targeted through the mosque where they were worshiping. They were targeted as a result. One of them was an imam. I think it's really very much relevant to their arrest and very much part of the culture of the time when this occurred in 2004. So
fair enough.
It was relevant, in fact. In any case, did you get to your point made?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
I think that it is very annoying for a leader, a public official, for every one of his or her decisions or points made in private to be leaked. But that is what a responsible news organization is going to do, is not to look for leaks in the sense that to do anything illegal, but to report on what it knows. I don't know. It's the First Amendment. There's a reason why the founders made it the First Amendment. They wanted that separation.
And
they wanted that watchdog.
And what about the reason they made it the Second Amendment, the other thing?
Yeah.
The guns.
Yeah.
You like that?
Do I like it? I like that there is a Second Amendment. I think that the Second Amendment could probably use a little tweaking because I think it's anachronistic. But that was not the First Amendment. That was the Second Amendment.
Yeah, but you're becoming an originalist, you know, if it's said so. I happen to agree with you about the importance of the First Amendment. I can't go on with this charade forever. But I agree with you about that. But I am also saying you can't pick and choose. You can't say the second needs tweaking, but the first is absolute.
There may
sure
be
you
people.
Can.
Sure. Well, but I
sure
there
you
may
can
be
if you're you guys.
Yeah.
If everybody sees, I wish you could all see Rex's face. He got a smirk on his face from one ear to the other.
You can say whatever you like. Speaking of saying whatever you like, here is the great news of the past week. Michelle Bachmann is retiring. Who is more sad about this? copy editors and fact checkers. You know, there's a guy named Glenn Kessler at the Washington Post, veteran reporter whose job in recent years has been to be a fact checker. That is, he writes a column holding politicians to the truth.
And she's a dream because she keeps things the
same. There are 243 entries in PolitiFact, which is now a nationwide Bachman archive, that are described by one columnist as a hallucinogenic history of the last few years of American politics. It's really quite amazing. So there is nobody in Washington who was so consistently and unapologetically wrong. And it's a wonderful thing to have such a public servant available to the media.
Has it ever been determined to anybody's satisfaction whether she was wrong because she's just plain not that smart or because she is devious and just twisted it to meet
Could be both. Yeah.
Dumb or
devious. Sounds like a game show.
But speaking of this, PolitiFact, by the way, which has operates in several states as well as nationally, was the subject of research at George Mason University, Center for Media and Public Affairs, and they looked at the fact checks just during this recent, the second term of President Obama. PolitiFact rated Republicans' claims as false 3 times more often than Democratic claims.
So it's a lefty thing.
You could say that. That would be one conclusion. This shows you how you can look at it. One thing is PolitiFact lefty, or are Republicans more typically making false claims than Democrats?
Right.
That would be what PolitiFact would say. So you would be attacking the media, PolitiFact, and defending the politicians there, Alan, which I've heard you do before.
Oh,
so,
please. There you go. You can't paint me into that corner. I won't have it.
If you'd like to join the conversation, remember, media@wamc.org is our email address. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, overall bon vivant.
And
If you'd like to join the conversation, although bear in mind, you may not be able to get in a word.
That's right. Yeah, poor Ira.
Ira Fussfeld, longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, and I'm Rex Smith, short-term editor of the Times Union. We don't really know. So out in Beverly Hills, they're protesting. They are carrying pickets. But what they are protesting is the possibility of Charles and David Koch buying the Tribune newspapers, including the LA Times.
Good idea.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Why?
No,
is it?
Good idea that they're protesting.
Well, yeah. But what's wrong? I mean, a bunch of rich guys wanting to prop up the news industry? That's a good thing, isn't it?
So, you know, you get Murdoch, the Koch brothers, and then the Koch brothers got into a little trouble recently. Did you see that? One of them, because they're giving a lot of money to public television, but then they put something on that they didn't like, and the money disappeared.
And although I don't agree with the Koch brothers politically, if the Koch brothers are scared away or somehow backed away from buying the papers as a result of these protests and nobody else shows up at the doorsteps with a check, will those newspapers implode and nobody will be working?
I don't think so. I think that there will be local buyers. If the price gets to be right, local buyers will emerge, and local owners can make newspapers succeed, largely because they don't amass the huge debt that the chains do, and they're willing to take a lower margin.
You know, we've talked about the paradigm change so many times here on the Media Project, which is maybe it's time to start running papers like you do WAMC, like you do public radio. Start telling the public, if you want a newspaper that can deliver fair and unbiased news, then put some money into it, and that way you'll have this outlet.
I don't remember now if I'm current on this, but aren't the current owners of the Philadelphia Inquirer, former Governor Rendell, and a number of big-time businessmen in that community who frequently were the targets of investigations by the Inquirer reporters, and there was a big hue and cry when they were coming in to buy the newspaper, but that newspaper, again, was in danger of closing, and so they're
and
still
the Post,
in business.
POST.
Well, we see just the other day the beginnings of what we talked about, where the separation of the Murdoch empire is separating the print from the broadcast empire, and the print empire is bracing itself for huge layoffs, and that could be the first step of a major decline in those properties.
The guy who is now going to be the CEO of the print arm of the Murdoch Empire, which is the lower margin business by comparison to
TV. Poor money losing business.
Says that they will be known for cost cutting.
Right.
And that's a terrifying thing to announce at the very outset of.
But it's a good technique if you're trying to scare everybody.
Well, yeah, it's a good technique. It's a good technique. The stockholders love it.
Yeah. Sure. Stockholders love it. But it's ultimately not a winning combination.
But as long as Rupert Murdoch wants to be read in the White House, wants to have influence, and has so many billions that it doesn't matter if some money goes out from the ledger in order to keep his newspaper, he'll do it. And so will the Koch brothers, because that's the way they control the media.
And there you go, the last word on the Media Project this week. Come back for more next week. Oh, we'll try not to shout it.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers.